This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
Okay, it is the Lombardi Line as we welcome you back on this February 18th. Hope you're having a nice weekend. He's Michael Lombardi. I'm Patrick Maher. The dust is settled on an NFL season, so we turn the page. Of course, you got 140-plus college basketball games today. As a matter of fact, Elliot, I'm going to send you over Thomas Gable's plays right now. Those are for VSiN Pros. We'll have Thomas Gable coming up in 29 minutes. Of course, he's Michael Lombardi. I'm Patrick Maher. Big news out of the NFL, though.
Before we get there, you need to sign up for to get Gable's picks, because I can only tell you when I'm over at the Borgata, you know, during football season, Gable's working on his spreadsheets for college hoops. Like, the man's obsessed with it. Like, and look, you know, if he hits 60% of his picks, you're making money. All right, so we're all going to make mistakes, but he's really vested into this. And I think what Tim Murray taught me today is that this is anyone's game. This tournament truly is going to be anyone's game, and the seeding of the tournament is going to have a lot to do with who wins this thing, right? It's always matchups against matchups. So, you know, Gable's been working on this long before before the season has kind of started the March Madness.
Yeah, Thomas Gable runs the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata. He is Mr. College Hoops. We all have our specialties when it comes to handicapping. Certainly his is everything, but
well, some,
he loves
some,
his passion
some have,
as college.
Some have, Patrick, let's face it, some are just so versed in everything. I mean, you know, there are some out there, I won't mention, they're just completely, they can do any sport, you know, and know it all.
I think you're onto something there. But you mentioned it's wide open this year with the field. There's probably 12 to 15 teams that can win the championship. These teams cannot go on the road and win a game. We saw it again with Purdue going to Maryland. Although Maryland, much better, their splits at home this year, and Willard's done a hell of a job with that Terrapin team. Purdue loses midweek at Maryland. Okay, we'll get to the college hoops coming up in just a little bit. However, let's get back to the NFL news. And look, there had been a ton of conversation surrounding whether or not Eric Bieniemy was going to get a head coaching job. He's interviewed for 12 plus jobs. He has yet to get one. It looks like he has secured the assistant head coach and offensive coordinator position with the Washington Commanders. Of course, I've talked about it ad nauseum, and I'm going to let you run with this. I think it's weird, because they're in flux as far as the ownership group. Ron Rivera feels like a dead, what do you call that? A lame duck. Pardon me. I was going to say dead duck, Michael. A lame duck head coach, potentially on his way out with new ownership. However, in a quarterback situation with Sam Howell that's up in the air, but good for Bieniemy as he's going to get out from Andy Reid's shadow.
Right, and, you know, it gives him a chance to actually install his offense, be in front of the room, putting the offense in, and then calling the offense on game day. You know, I mean, everybody wasn't sure, did he call the game on game day? And, you know, he was calling the game to the quarterback, but Reed was telling him what to call to the quarterback. So that's kind of how it worked. And look, you know, I mean, Bieniemy has a lot of opportunities to sit in front of owners. There's a book called Rejection Proof, which is a book about how to handle getting rejected and what you should do and how you are able to then move yourself forward. And I think whenever you've been in front of 12 teams, obviously you're not selling yourself to a level that you need to, or to your talent level. So this gives him an opportunity to remove any doubt about his career, about who calls the plays, how he installs it. And look, he's going to take over an offense that wasn't very effective last year. Let's be honest. I mean, they struggled. That offensive line has got to concern them. I mean, it wasn't all just play design why they weren't good on offense. A lot of it was they struggled at quarterback and they struggled in the offensive line. They've got weapons. I mean, he doesn't take over a team offensively that's devoid of talent. McLaurin, you know, Dotson, the young kid, the Penn State receiver, was outstanding. You know, they've got running backs. The line, they've got to improve. If they can do that and Howell plays effectively, they will move the football.
Sources say that Bieniemy is going to get a promotion and title, multi-year deal, an annual pay raise. So it's all good as far as the fiscal promotion and also title. The question you just mentioned, they've got a ton of skill. McLaurin's a stud. Dotson was a hit. But they don't have... Right now, and you heard Ron Rivera there at Radio Row talking about Sam Howell is going to be the starter unless somebody beats him out. Sam Howell has one start in the NFL. That's the question. What will the Commanders do at quarterback, Michael?
Yeah, I think they're going to go with Howell. I think they're going to try to shore up the offensive line. I think they're going to go with Howell and then try to work it around him and, you know, and see if Bieniemy can develop how. I mean, look, Steichen developed Hurts. Whatever he decided to do with that offense, he did. I mean, Sam Howell's not exactly a guy that – I know he was picked in the fifth round, but there were moments with Sam Howell in his collegiate career where a lot of people thought he could be a first-round pick. Now, he kind of fell off the planet. He didn't play well as the year went on, and he's going to have to beat out Heinicke, who's on the roster. They're going to get rid of Wentz, so I don't think that's going to be an issue. But, you know, when you look at this team, he's got, you know, he's got some really good players. Curtis Samuel as a number three receiver is pretty good, right? You know, they got Logan Thomas at tight end. They've got Brian Robinson coming out of the backfield. Gibson is there a little bit. They signed J.D. McKissic to a huge contract last year as the nickel guy. This is a team that has a chance. But, again, they're so bad in the offensive line. Leno, Trey Turner's a free agent. I mean, they're going to have to fix that offensive line really badly before he can take a step. But there's skill here. There's actually really good skill here. There's probably, if you compare the skill level here in Kansas City compared to where he was, in Washington compared to Kansas City, he's got better receivers. McLaurin would be the best receiver on Kansas City. Dotson would be the best receiver on Kansas City. Let's make no bones. Now, they don't have Travis Kelce, but they do have players.
Well, we can officially, as we throw up the graphic, good job, Elliot, we can officially let you know the Commanders have tweeted about it. Eric Bieniemy, welcome, as they officially welcome their new offensive coordinator. Of course, helped run the offense to two championships there in Kansas City. There was always questions, and you saw the concerted effort from Andy Reid after the Super Bowl to get this guy a job.
No doubt.
It was political towards the end there, and I guess we have to give Reid credit for that, kind of calling out Bieniemy's importance after the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, and look, Reid has influence in the league. You know, he got Doug Peterson a job in Philadelphia. I mean, Jeff Lurie called him, and he got him that job. And he got Matt Nagy the job in Chicago. Look, you know, Ryan Poles is the general manager in Chicago. He worked with Bieniemy. He was there with Bieniemy. He hired Matt Eberflus with Justin Fields at quarterback. So I don't know why that happened. I would love to ask Ryan Poles that question. I think some people should, especially all the people that think Bieniemy should be a head coach. Maybe they should ask Ryan Poles why he didn't hire him. They should ask Chris Ballard why he didn't hire him. He was with him in Kansas City. John Dorsey was with him in Kansas City as well when he went to Cleveland. So I think, to me, you got to find out. And if you're Bieniemy, you got to find out, why aren't I getting these jobs? What do I have to do to prove it? Is it my work on the field? Is it my work off the field? Is it my presentation? All those things have to come in.
Yeah, Poles didn't even interview him. And then your boy Daboll goes to the Giants, and he took Kafka, the quarterback coach. So Bieniemy gets passed up not just by the owners. He gets passed up by those in the league that are getting jobs. Again, we would never dismiss the abhorrent hiring practices by the NFL over the years.
Ridiculous.
As far as minorities. That's not it is what Steve Wilkes not having a job and Brian Flores not having a job is outrageous. But there's something with the Bieniemy stuff here.
Right. I mean, look, Bieniemy has become why. Everybody's wondering why. I wonder why what else could Steve Wilkes have done to not get the job? I mean, Marty Schottenheimer takes over for Sam Ratigliano, and I think and Marty Schottenheimer goes, he's basically did exactly what Steve Wilkes did, and Art Modell extended him and gave him the full-time job. Now, before Schottenheimer took the job from Sam Ratigliano, he told Modell, I'm not an interim. You either make me the head coach or not, because I'll have no juice here. It's too hard to do it. And Modell did. So he went, and he was 8-8. He was .500 by the time the year was over. Wilkes didn't even ask for that. Wilkes just said, okay, let me prove to you. And he did. And he still doesn't get the job. I don't know what else Steve has to do. You know, and I think what David Tepper, the owner, said simply was, I want an offensive coach. I want to develop the quarterback. All the rules favor the offense. I need somebody to run the offense. I got that. But you just hired somebody from Indianapolis who didn't run the offense effectively, that couldn't fix the position you need to fix the most. There's double-edged talking out of both sides. It doesn't make sense. To me, that's the conversation we should be having there. I mean, Bieniemy not getting hired by Poles, Ballard, and all the people that have been in Kansas City, that has to be a concern. Because the league is a copycat league. The league is going to do what other people do. And when you're in demand, they want to get you there. So I think, to me, if I were Wilkes or Flores, give Flores all the credit in the world. He's in a lawsuit against the league over these issues. And he admitted he was offered the Arizona job. He could have easily said, I wasn't offered that job. right? And that would have added to his lawsuit. But he didn't. He stood up for it. He said, hey, look, I was offered. I had a chance to be there. I didn't think it was the right fit for me. I applaud him.
And you mentioned Wilkes. He was there in Arizona just for one season. Steve Keim, the general manager then, he was just throwing darts at a dartboard. He had a good relationship with Bidwell, kept his job, drafts Rosen, moves on from Rosen after 1 year, moves on from Wilkes after 1 year. Wilkes takes over an impossible spot down in Carolina, goes 6-6 down the stretch. The idea he doesn't have a job, I hate to harp on it, is we're incredulous about that.
He's paying a price for what happened to him in Arizona. But look, you know, that Arizona job, I mean, when I went back yesterday and watched the Gannon press conference with Michael Bidwell, I mean, I could see why Brian Flores didn't want to take that job. I mean, that they're in love with their quarterback. They think the quarterback is still great. I don't see him as a franchise quarterback at all. I don't see that. I mean, I see an undersized quarterback who people understand now how to rush. And when you rush him, especially now coming off of ACL surgery, is he still going to have that explosiveness in his body? I don't know. And his demeanor, his character, splintered the team. There's nobody going to deny that.
100%. Yep. And Will, tomorrow on the show, we're going to grade the head coaching hires this offseason, so we'll have some fun with that. By the way, Bieniemy, uphill battle as far as the quarterback position. Heineke's going to be a free agent, and Sam Howell has started one game. So if he does develop Howell, if he is the starter, he will certainly get a head coaching job. There's no doubt about that, because that will be incredible for the resume. When we come back, we talked about turning the page. Let's look ahead to next year's contenders in the NFL, the writing spotlight with Michael Lombardi next.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, it's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app. BetMGM Sports has all your favorite wagering options. You can go in-game. Remember, they reconfigured the app, so the in-game experience is much more active, I would say, and immediate. The Strip, stop by it. MGM property, bring your state-issued ID. You're ready to bet within minutes. 21 years or older, 1-800-522-4700. If you have a gambling issue. Okay, we've got Thomas Gable coming up in about 12 minutes here on the Lombardi Line as we welcome you back. Hope you're having a nice weekend. He's Michael Lombardi. I'm Patrick Maher. Let's talk about next year. We're talking about turning the page. You wrote a great article over at VSiN.com, and that is, you know, kind of looking forward, and everybody starts 0-0. That's where we start, okay? So by the time the confetti hits the ground, and before Terry Bradshaw was awkwardly, I'll add that in, handing the can we just say this? It's time to move on from Terry Bradshaw having anything to do with going off the cuff. And when he said waddle up here to Andy Reid, that is completely ridiculous. I digress. But everybody's 0-0. Everybody's 0-0 as we start the season. So it's everything's promising, including my Detroit Lions.
Yeah, I mean, look, and I think as bettors, this is really a great time for us to examine the NFL and the futures market, because one move is going to shift these numbers significantly. You know, if the Jets get Aaron Rodgers, their numbers are going to shift. And as Vinny said yesterday on our show, all these deals are predicated on what's going to happen in free agency, and no one really knows what that will entitle. So I think you have to kind of like look at the landscape. One of the things that I didn't write it in the article was a lot of these teams, Al Davis specifically, would always wanted his team to be set before any offseason went into play. What does that mean? He wanted to be able to play a game with the roster already intact. Now, it wasn't going to be a good enough roster. You know, you're going to have certain guys at certain positions that probably couldn't play, but you could get through a game. And then you add to that in the areas that you need to do. And that's one of the things I think that lends me to the Cincinnati Bengals and why I wrote the column and infuriated all the Kansas City fans, because, you know, they're like, you know, well, we could have won more games than we won. Look, I think if you're fair and honest about the evaluation, let's go back to Super Bowl 56 when, you know, they don't call false start. It's clear and obvious. They don't make a false start call, and they get the Cooper Kupp penalty, and they lose that game. Then this year, you know, the Chiefs have the return because they punt the ball down the middle of the field, and the penalty, which was the right call, you know, gets them the field goal to win the game. That game goes to overtime. I don't see how the Bengals lose that game, especially considering where Mahomes' ankle was at that point. So, you know, I think they have everything going for them. You know, they have a lot of good players on their roster. They're going to sign Burrow, and his competitiveness is going to drive the team completely. And I think when you do that, and you look at where they are, you know, is Cleveland going to be better? I don't know. Will Pittsburgh be better? Probably. But I think when you look at their team, they have a chance to really extend themselves. They have a couple free agents that they've got to get signed, namely Jermaine Pratt. They've got to get him under contract. But their secondary is also free, but they drafted a lot of guys to help that out last year. You know, they draft Dax Hill in the first round. Can he replace Jesse Bates if he, you know, if they can't sign him back? I probably think he could. So they're a team that if they stay healthy, that offense is going to stay intact.
Okay, Elliot, leave that graphic up there. BetMGM has the Chiefs as your favorite to win the Super Bowl next year at 6-1. No surprise. But your second betting favorite, to Michael's point, are the Bengals at 8.5-1. The Bills are 9-1 right behind them, 50 cents off. The Eagles 9-1 as well, and the 49ers 9-1. You look at the DraftKings market, Cincinnati's 10-1. So they're your fourth betting favorite. Let's go back to your look ahead. You said the Bengals can challenge the Chiefs. And keeping Lou Anarumo, I always say his name incorrectly, so I apologize, but the defensive coordinator, keeping him on staff and him not getting a head coaching job was huge for them.
I think it was, you know, and because they're going to have four free agents on the defensive front, they're going to need to make sure they get players that fit what he wants them to do. And he has been the architect of their defense. He has been the guy that, you know, drafted Osiah in the third round and Carter in the third round and all these guys that play for him, Sample in the fourth round, these guys that make a contribution to the team, he's been part of that. And so I think ultimately they're going to continue down that road and they'll replace these linebackers. They'll replace Pratt, and I'm sure they'll replace the safeties because both safeties are going to be up and Eli Apple's going to be up. So I don't see it as a problem. Everybody said, well, Burrow's going to get under contract. Look, they have more than enough money to add players to their team. Plus they'll have draft choices to add to their team and they have Burrow. I mean, they have Burrow, which really helps. So I think there's somebody to consider. And why I like them so much is because they've gone to Buffalo and they dominated that game. You could say the field was a problem for Buffalo. Well, it might have been, but it was the same field Buffalo played on. It wasn't a problem for Cincinnati putting pressure on Josh Allen. So they dominated. That game wasn't close. You watch that game on tape, that game wasn't close. They dominated Buffalo. I know the Bills Mafia, you know, they're a good play at the number, but, you know, they're going to have to show improvement in the defensive line to take that next step. And then I think when you look at the, you know, and the Chiefs, they've played the Chiefs four times in the last 2 years. They're 3-1 against them, and the one loss could have gone the other way.
So tomorrow we're going to dig here on the Lombardi Line deep into what the Eagles will be facing this offseason. Obviously, losing a heartbreaker in the Super Bowl is tough to bounce back from. Teams can react one of two ways. They can become hungry and really have a concerted focus, or there can be a little bit of a letdown. Can the Eagles get back? You wrote about it. The Eagles roster will get younger overall, more by choice than salary cap.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they have to make choices now. And what Jerry Jones was saying about the Eagles going all in is that he was saying the way they've structured their contracts, people think all in when they associate that with the Rams because they went all in giving away draft picks. What the Eagles have done is the Eagles have done voided years of contracts so that they can squeeze the money into the one-year cap. So Howie Roseman's going to sign a player, and he's going to lower his cap number this year, but he's extending them out future years because he's paying them. Okay, so now when that player leaves, when those contracts become voided, that money gets dumped into the next year's pool. And so the Eagles are going to have a lot of money dumped into that pool simply because they went and put a lot of cash into this season. And so that's what Jerry was talking about. Now, they can massage and they can keep that because, look, the Saints have done this for years and they've been able to work around the salary cap. So it's not going to be a problem. But when you start to add up some of the money that's going to be left behind, Hargrave is going to leave, you know, probably $11 million behind. Brandon Graham could leave $9 million behind. If Kelsey retires, there's another $9 million. The guard, Samalo, he's going to leave $7 million behind. Bradbury's going to leave $4 million behind. They start to add that up, and then you pay Hurts $45 million. Your cap's going to get tight. Now, they'll spend over the cap. That's not an issue. But that limits what you can do.
You point out in the article, and again, you can go take a look. It's extensive. VSiN.com for Michael's article. But you point out the schedule's not going to be as favorable for the Eagles as well.
No. I mean, look, they had a Gonzaga-like schedule. I know I say that all year, and they dominated it. But they didn't play. Schedules are simply how many good quarterbacks do you face that are playing at a high level, right? That's really what schedules are about. That it's not about the name of the team. And so when you look at their schedule and you say, well, they played the Vikings. Okay, they dominated Kirk Cousins. Kyler Murray, you know, is he a blue chip player? Dak Prescott didn't play the first game. You know, they played a rookie in the Steelers. They played Davis Mills. You know, they played, you know, the Colts in a close game. I think Ryan played that game. But the Aaron Rodgers, they put 33 on him. You know, we talked about the two games we talked about before the Super Bowl where the Cowboys scoring 40 on them and the Packers scoring 33. But every other team they played, the quarterback wasn't elite. Now, next year, they're going to have to play some elite quarterbacks, and I think that's going to be the issue, and it's going to require them to improve their secondary, and where are they going to get their depth? Where are they going to get their depth next year? Where are they going to improve that depth?
You also point out they can't count on being as healthy as they were. Health is, I mean, this is literal luck when it comes down to health. I mean, luck, I say that, obviously your training staff has something to do with it, but oftentimes injuries come down to luck.
Well, I mean, look, let's look here. So they play Kansas City next year, probably will be the Thursday night game, right? So they play in Arrowhead. So they got Mahomes again. They're going to play Miami with Tua. They're going to play Josh Allen. They're going to play San Francisco again, right? So they're going to play the Jets, and who's going to be their quarterback, right? They're going to play the Rams. They're going to play the Cowboys twice. So their schedule, just looking at it, they got Tampa Bay and Minnesota next year. Their schedule, they're playing the AFC. They're playing the AFC teams, you know, the winner of the AFC West, their schedule's a little more challenging than it was this year. They're playing the AFC East and the AFC East and the NFC. Let me see who else they have. Oh, they have the South.
South and the, what was the other one? I'm sorry, I missed it. You said the South
and the NFC
and
West. They're playing the AFC
it's be a
East
much
and the NFC
schedule.
West. Yeah, much harder.
Yep, Philadelphia. That's, and again, we're going to take a deep dive. They've got a lot on their plate. Next, a deep dive into college hoops with Thomas Gable here on the Lombardi Line.
You're listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, introductory offer right now, $9.99. You can get everything we offer, including the Pro Tools. Again, the Pro Tools include a lot, but the betting splits are part of those Pro Tools, Pro Picks. So we'll handicap. You're busy one day. We're going to send you picks on picks every single day. Also, Pro Tips every single day from every show. It's all for $9.99 right now. VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. As we welcome you back here, Michael Lombardi there. I'm Patrick Maher. This is the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. We've got our buddy Thomas Gable live from the Borgata Sportsbook. He's a sports director there. And it's Christmas for you, my friend. Can you just explain to the audience your passion for college basketball, college hoops, as we welcome you in?
Well, good morning to both you guys.
Good morning.
No, I enjoy the sport very much. I mean, it's my favorite sport to watch and to handicap. It's always been that way. So, and the sport has evolved dramatically over the years with the way just the business of it is now. I mean, with doing the transfer portal and the NIL deals, and it's really kind of transformed the sport from when I began watching it. But here we are, and we find ourselves, you know, football's wrapped up, with the exception of the XFL. And, we're on to basketball. We have a little break here from the NBA with All-Star Weekend. So the focus is pretty much going to be on college basketball right now.
You know, TG, I asked this to Tim Murray we had on in the last block, and you know, Tim was talking about how wide open this race is and how there's really no dominant team, and the NIL kind of has sent everything kind of up and down. The blue bloods don't seem like they're blue bloods. Kentucky and Duke, where are they? Yep. We don't know. But if you were to pick out four teams that have longer than 10-1 odds to get to the Final Four, what four would you work on?
Well, it's tough to pick it only as four because, as you said, I mean, there really isn't two or three elite teams this year. There's so many that I think have the potential to win, and you have a lot of the teams there that have, you know, 10, 12, 14, 20-1 that I think could potentially do it. So there's quite a few. I think if you go even longer on the odds boards, you know, the Big East this year, I think there's a couple teams there that can probably make some noise come tournament time. Creighton's sitting there at 30-1 right now. Marquette is at 35-1. And again, if you get one of these teams there where you have a 30-1 ticket on or 35-1 ticket, you can, and they make a deeper run, you can maneuver off of that come tournament time. So, those are the ones, you know, I like to look for ones there in that are above 20-1. And then you have some room to maneuver. I know, Patrick, I think I gave you Tennessee before the season started when they were like 30-1. They're now, you know, creeping closer to 12-1, 15-1 range. But again, they're a team that not necessarily Tennessee, I think, won't be there at the very end, but they can make a deep run. And when you have that ticket sitting in your pocket, that's where you can kind of maneuver around then.
Well, let's talk about Tennessee because they're at Kentucky today, and this is not a misprint. Tennessee's lane at Kentucky. They're lane two. So we should talk. Listen, yeah. it's an okay offensive team. They can absolutely drive you crazy watching Tennessee on offense at times. But how about this? Alabama, number one, come Monday, and then they go to Tennessee. Tennessee's playing with 7-8 players. They beat the number one ranked team. So that kind of highlights exactly how wide open and how just day-to-day, how disparate this can be, Thomas.
Yeah, and that game there, people didn't understand that there was respect to money that came down Tennessee and made that line move there from the overnight line. And you saw the public, well, you have the number one team in the country in Alabama. How could they be getting points? But they were getting points for a reason. So, listen, this Tennessee team can be confounding at times. Like you said, defensively, they're very good. And this is the second meeting between these two this season. Kentucky traveled to Knoxville. They beat Tennessee 63-56 back on January 14th as a double-digit underdog. And at the time, it was a monster win for Kentucky, who was really in dire need of one, of a big win there at the time. The Volunteers looking for some payback here. They're coming off that big win against Alabama on Wednesday. And then when you look back at that January game, Kentucky out-rebounded Tennessee 43-23. And this game here today, I think, is going to again come down to who wins the battle of the boards. Hopefully Tennessee, for them, will shoot a lot better than they did. That first time out, they went 3 of 21 from 3 in that game. So it'll be interesting to see how Rick Barnes has his team perform here. Coming off that huge win at home, now going on the road to play at Rupp Arena in a tough matchup. I still have my doubts about this team overall, even though I want to get on board with Tennessee. But this game, I think, will give us a good clue to their overall makeup of the team itself going in here to Kentucky.
And what, Thomas, tell me, why is Kentucky, which is 17-9, what do they lack as a team that typically we're used to seeing them so highly rated and able to, you know, to compete for Final Fours, even though they haven't been to one in a long, long time?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think defensively it's been a down year for them, you know, and that's really what it comes down to. They were losing some games there early in the year. And listen, some of their losses there to, you know, UCLA isn't really a bad loss. They did lose to Missouri. Alabama's not a bad loss, but they lost to South Carolina. They have been able to right the ship and get some decent wins. They're not, I wouldn't say that they're eliminated here from the tournament at all. And I think this, if they win this game here today at Tennessee, I think that goes a long way into locking up a spot for them. But I think just overall defensively, that this team has lacked at times. But you know, and they're not an extremely efficient scoring team from inside the arc either.
You nailed it. I think if Kentucky beats Tennessee today, I think they'll be in the tournament. So let's move to Alabama. You're going to lay a big price today. Alabama coming off a tough loss on Wednesday at Tennessee. Here comes Georgia. Georgia's 1-2 straight. They beat LSU. They beat Kentucky. But Bama's laying 18.5 here, and that's one of your three plays you sent out for VSiN Pros.
Yeah, and really, this is, again, we kind of look at situational spots here now with, you know, there's a lot of data that's already that we have on this season. So Alabama comes in here 12-1 in the SEC and suffered their first conference loss there to Tennessee on Wednesday. And they have a one-game lead on Texas A&M in the standings. And I don't think they're going to get much resistance here tonight from Georgia. Comes in 6-7 in conference. Alabama, I think one of the great stories in college basketball this season, playing at extremely high level under Nate Oates. And let's not forget about the director of basketball operations, Bill Berman, as well there for Bama.
No doubt.
You know, they want a number one seed here come March, and this just is not a good matchup for Georgia. They can struggle offensively. They don't get many high-percentage looks to begin with, as they rely on creating shots off isolation matchups, going one-on-one, and that's just not going to work well against this Alabama defense, which is one of the best in the country. I also don't expect Georgia to be able to stop Alabama offensively. Alabama is deadly from mid-range, shooting 45.7%, and Georgia just does not defend that area well. So I would not hesitate really to lay the number here with Alabama at home.
Thomas, we only have a couple minutes left. How about Iowa State, Kansas State? You know, those are two really good teams from a great conference. What's your thoughts on that game?
Well, as you said, tremendous, tremendous conference this year for the Big 12, and Kansas State has been one of the great stories. Now they've fallen on some hard times here lately. They've lost 4 or 5, and six of their last 8, I believe. So, coming off a loss against Oklahoma and Texas Tech, I do like them here a little bit against Iowa State. Should be a very close game, competitive game. But I do like Kansas State here in a little bounce-back spot.
Okay. On the way out, we have a minute. Maybe we can talk Georgetown basketball. No, I'm just playing. I'm trolling you a little bit. How about Patrick Ewing legitimately possibly being one of the worst coaches of all time? It's impossible to do a worse job than what Ewing's done at Georgetown. I'm trying to be fair here, Thomas.
Yeah. Listen, there's not much else to say other than that. I mean, he goes from being, you know, the hero of the program as a player to really, you know, tarnishing that legacy as this head coach. So,
you know, it's
hard. The program can't be any lower.
Whenever you are in that remember when mode for schools like Georgetown, like, you know, a lot of schools, they have a hard time getting out of it because they want to stay within their family. Sometimes that doesn't work.
Well, I remember when Georgetown won conference games, but it wasn't over the last two seasons. Patrick Ewing is 1-34 in the Big East over the last two seasons. That's you walk your way into a couple wins. 1-34. Let's move on from Patrick. Okay. Thomas Gable, great job. Good luck today. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Okay. We're coming back with the Chiefs, prospectively for next year.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
BetMGM is the king of sportsbooks. Unleash the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. So every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM reward points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. If you're planning a trip to Vegas, well, you could also convert your BetMGM points into BetMGM reward points that you can use towards dining shows and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Vegas Strip and nationwide. BetMGM Rewards is sports betting's premier loyalty program. It's kind of like a credit card. You place a bet, you get points, you accrue those points, you use them for rewards. 1-800-GAMBLER. If you have an issue, got to be 21 years or older. Okay, we're going to get back to Michael's writing spotlight, which you can find at VSiN.com extensively. Michael Lombardi there. I'm Patrick Maher. This is the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. A good time to remind you, Michael, you can sign up for the VSiN Daily, the daily newsletter. It's free. Just go to VSiN.com. Bill A.D., the scribe of all scribes, has got you covered as we head into the college basketball season. Also, XFL today. So everything is ready to go. We'll end with where we started, that being Aaron Rodgers. So let's do this. We talked about the Eagles. Let's dip back into the writing spotlight and discuss the Kansas City Chiefs. Not quite a dynasty yet, but will they be ready to compete next season was the question you posed in your article.
Oh, I don't, you know, look, the one thing I think we as fans don't always kind of layer into our handicapping is how long the season is for the teams that get to the final four games and the final two games, the Super Bowl. And your body is worn down, and that residual effect of the long season then takes, you know, effect into the off season. You kind of start slower, and, you know, you have these issues partly around the team there, players wanting more money, and, you know, they want it, as Pat Riley says, it becomes a disease of me. And so I think you just have to kind of weigh that in. Now, the thing that Kansas City has going for them is they have the best quarterback in football. So, you know, they're able to do that. They're able to work around that. But they're going to have to make some decisions. I mean, Frank Clark is cap number next year is due to make, you know, he's due to make $20 million. Frank Clark's not a $20 million player. We saw that in the Super Bowl. So they're going to have to be some adjustments made. I mean, for Frank Clark to make more money than Travis Kelce on the team, probably not going to work out. So they're going to have to do a lot of things within their roster. They, you know, they'll have some dead money. You know, they're going to have to figure out how they're going to handle the value of where they are. I mean, because Frank Clark would be overpaid. They got Hardeman. They're going to have to sign it. You know, some of these young players that have played well for them, they'll move forward and get them done. So there's a lot of moving parts here. But the good thing is they had 11 rookies at draft picks make their team, and they've got a great quarterback, and they'll still have first-round picks.
The drafting, and you don't hear a lot from the general manager, but Pacheco and, you know, in fact, we were talking about it on yesterday's show, just Andy Reid going to the run game. A lot was, there's still a lot left to unpack from that Super Bowl because there's so many angles to dissect, but going to the run game and Pacheco, the rookie out of Rutgers, was incredible for them.
Yeah, no, and look, they've got, you know, he gave them some juice, right? So, you know, he beat – and give Andy Reid credit and their offensive staff because, you know, most teams and Brett Veach, most teams would want to force Edwards-Helaire down. You know, we drafted him one. We've got to prove he's the right guy, and he's not. But, you know, they're going to have to adjust some things because it starts with Orlando Brown. They didn't sign him to a contract. Andrew Wiley's not under contract. So the two starting tackles are not under contract. Smith-Schuster and Hardeman are both free agents. So they're going to lose – they're not going to sign all those guys. And then they're going to have to fix the defense. I mean, you know, like I said, Frank Clark isn't a $20 million a year player. They're going to have to readjust that. But as long as you have a good farm system where you're bringing in players – then, you know, you could do that. And Andy Reid is really good offensively at finding guys like McKinnon. You know, he was out of football for 2 years with a knee injury, and they bring him in and he serves his role. You know, they brought Ronald Jones in this year, and he really didn't help them. But, you know, they'll figure out a way to get another back in there to go with Pacheco. You know, they have a Helaire. They won't pick up his fifth-year option, but, you know, he was drafted in 20, so they don't have any. They don't have to do that right away. And they'll keep working around it. And we all know this. They win with their offense. Their defense complements them by creating negative plays. So the Chiefs aren't going anywhere. It's just going to be harder because they have the target on their back like they always do.
Okay, of course, you've got Live Bet Saturday coming up after the Lombardi Line here in about 7 minutes with JVT and Will Hill. Before we get to them, let's finish where we started today. Bob McGinn covered the Packers for close to 40 years. Michael Lombardi wrote this, and it's all over the news today. He said, quote, they're disgusted with him. He's talking about Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, and they're done with him, and they're moving on. This is going to involve money and a trade partner and all kinds of things, but he says, as of right now, I'm convinced, based on my own instincts and knowing the NFL and knowing what happens after all these defeats in that organization, that the Packers are moving on from Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I mean, and my instincts have told me that for the last month. You know, like to me, I didn't understand why you would sign him to this deal if you weren't going to get 2 years out of him. But I think this was a taxing year on everybody in Green Bay, including Rodgers. And so if they want to move on from Rodgers, they know they have trade partners out there, whether it's the Raiders or the Jets. My sense of it is the Jets are very desperate to make a move, you know, and the Jets will overpay financially and they'll overpay compensation. And when you get those two things going together, they'll make it happen. Now, the Jets, you know, the Jets have some issues they're going to have to handle in terms of their cap as well. And maybe that's why they brought Carr in. But I think this divorce is going to happen.
The Jets with Rodgers, again, in the market right now, the Raiders are your big-time prohibitive favorites at minus 330. The Packers are your second betting favorite at plus 250. And the Jets are your third betting favorite at plus 380. But again, to reiterate what Michael said, he believes the Jets should be a shorter number than plus 380. At 39 years old, would you be concerned about adding him for the next 2-3 years if he were to play that long?
You know, I mean, I think the way I watch his game, I think he could still play. I really do. I think he could still play. I don't see any game. I don't see him not being able to play. I think he's really still an effective player. And, you know, I think he could play 2 years. His movement, his courage, all those things seem to work really well for him. So why can't he continue to go at a high level? You know, and I mean, the thing is you've got to have the patience and the understanding of what you're getting into. You're going to have a meeting and sit down and say, can this work? It's going to have to be a partnership. You know, it's going to have to be a partnership, and you're going to have to be willing to modify and change. I mean, Matthew Stafford was. He went from Detroit to Los Angeles. He did that. They won a Super Bowl. So we'll see how that goes. I think that's something that you have to really take a look at. The compensation for me is going to be fascinating because he's worth a lot, even for just 3 years. But if he only plays 1 year, how much is he worth?
Yeah, that'll be the trade, and the compensation will be, as you said, fascinating. Okay, the two big stories where we started, we'll end with. That was Aaron Rodgers. Now Eric Bieniemy. The Commanders officially tweeted it earlier today, just during the show in real time. A deal is complete and official. Washington is giving Eric Bieniemy the title of assistant head coach and offensive coordinator. So a big move from Bieniemy out from under the big shadow of Andy Reid.
Yeah, now it's his opportunity. As Al Davis would say to me all the time, at some point, kid, you're going to play in the game. You know, and he's going to play in the game. And he's going to have a chance to develop a young quarterback. And he's not walking into a team that's devoid of skill players, right? They've got skill. They don't have great offensive linemen, but they have skill. Robinson, a running back, a good young running back. They've got good receivers. They've got a tight end in Logan Thomas. I mean, they got to fix their offensive line. There's no doubt. The challenge for him is going to be his relationship with those coaches who are already there. You know, the John Matschulls, the Juan Castiles, Jim Hostetler, those guys that have worked on this staff, they're all from the West Coast system. So that transition shouldn't be as hard for Bieniemy, but he's never worked with them. So he's going to have to earn their respect in that room. He's going to have to show that he can command the room, be the leader, and take over the team, and then he's got to develop the quarterback. And that's going to be the harder thing because he's always been more of a running back coach. Andy Reid coaches the quarterback. Remember, when you go to the sidelines, you see Reid sitting there next to Mahomes. You don't see Bieniemy sitting there coaching him. You see Reid. Reid coaches the quarterback. Reid picks the quarterbacks. That's going to be the challenge for Eric, and if he does that, the sky's the limit for him.
Yep. And that is the biggest question for the Commanders. And Bieniemy, now his job becomes, like you said, acclimating himself to a staff that's already present. And also, what the hell are they going to do at quarterback? That's always the biggest question coming out of the offseason for a team. Sam Howell's got one start. Heineke's a free agent, so maybe they make a move. What are they drafting? 16? Somewhere between 16 and 18. Yeah. So they'd have to move up to grab one of those big dogs, Michael, as far as a quarterback.
No, they got to get offensive linemen. I mean, they've got to get an offensive line. Because even if they change the quarterback, I mean, they got to get an offensive line. Can they get something for Wentz, Patrick? That's going to be the interesting thing.
Yeah.
They paid for Wentz. They give Chris Ballard credit. He got more for Wentz than I ever thought he could have gotten when he left Indianapolis.
They paid Wentz.
You think Frank Wright will take him
in
Carolina?
Reich loved him, didn't he?
Remember,
they went down to Jacksonville with a chance to make the postseason and completely fell apart. And Wentz was terrible in the game.
Had a chance to beat the Raiders at home. Had a chance to beat the Raiders at home, and he missed three or four open receivers in that game. He didn't practice all week because he had COVID.
Speaking of the Raiders, we'll have Derek Carr news tomorrow, and we'll take a deep dive into the Eagles' rebuild after a loss, not necessarily rebuild. Michael, enjoy your Saturday. Live Thanks, Bet Pat. Saturday, JBT.
Enjoy your Saturday,
Thank
Patrick.
You. Thank you very much.